This has been today's Concert Billboard. Tune in each day to hear when your favorite performers are appearing at venues in the WUSB broadcast area. Look for the WUSB Concert Billboard group on Facebook. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. It's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock. Time for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. And this is going to be one of those programs where I'm not really sure where I'm going to wind up going because I'm sort of swerving all over the place. Every now and then I get sick, okay? And it happened. It happened this week. I don't know what it is. I think it's all the changing temperatures that make this happen. But yeah, last 3 days I've been waking up with raging headaches and fever and basically trying to stumble through the day. And well, now I've stumbled into here and I'm going to try and make it through the hour without leaving too much wreckage behind. But yeah, okay, it happens. It doesn't happen to me very often. Doesn't happen very often at all. But this is an opportunity for me to go into the medicine cabinet and start using some of the leftover drugs that I have from various other times where I was sick. Last time I think I was actually sick was when I was in Belarus last summer, and I wound up getting these amazing painkillers from the Czech Republic in Prague. Oh, that was great. That was something. Kyle and I had arrived in Prague on the way back from Kiev, and we had a night to spend there, and the very first stop that I made was to a drugstore so that I could get some painkillers. I only used them then. I have not used them since, but I brought them back with me. And it's interesting how whenever you come back into this country, or when I come back into this country, I always get searched and questioned, but they don't seem to care about the drugs that I'm actually carrying. You know, I mean, yeah, they're legal, they're over the counter, but they don't even find them. They're in my knapsack, exactly where you would expect them to be. They don't even look. They just are interested in delaying, harassing, and being jerks, all of which they accomplish admirably. So, so I've been basically sampling those over the last few days. Ibuprofen, it's, 600 milligrams instead of the wimpy 200 that you get in Advils here? Yeah, so it's the big leagues. And it works for the most part. It gets me to a particular point. But this kind of thing usually lasts a few days, and then it's gone. At least that's the hope. And, yeah, you know, it's a good thing it didn't happen last week, because last week was my whole asthma thing, where I went to the allergist and found out or was told that my lungs are 85 years old. You know, I kind of doubt that. The update to that story, since then, I went on a bike ride down to the South Shore and back. It's about 30 miles. That was 2 days later. Felt great, amazing way to spend an afternoon, and I totally recommend those of you who think you can't do something like that, try it anyway, and you'll find that your stamina builds up and you can have all kinds of fun, just like you used to when you were a kid. And I intend to ride in the Five Borough ride, which is coming up in just under 2 weeks in New York City. That's about 40 miles. So yeah, you know, this isn't an 85-year-old lung talking, or two of them. And then afterwards, after I had done that ride, I decided I wanted to stop at the drugstore and pick up what's known as a peak level meter. Now, anyone who has asthma must know what one of these things is. It's basically you inhale and then you blow out as hard as you can into this device. And it measures a particular number that goes, I think, from like 50 all the way up to 800. And that's supposed to measure your lung output capacity. I had one of these from many years ago when I first suspected I might have asthma. I had one of these. And the reason that I thought maybe I didn't have asthma was because I kept blowing into the thing, and it would go all the way to the top. And when I told that to my doctor, he said, now you don't have asthma if you're pegging the thing. Yeah, in his medical opinion, that was his conclusion. That's all I had to say to be undiagnosed with asthma. Just like this time, all I had to say to my GP was, yeah, you know what, I think I might have asthma. Okay, here's asthma medication. You know, that's medical care in this country. So I figured there was something wrong with it because I was now told by this allergist that, yeah, you know, you definitely have asthma. So I blew into the thing. I found the thing and I blew into it again. And once again, I got all the way at the top. So there must be something wrong with it. So I went to my local drugstore and asked them, where can I find a peak level meter? Oh, we don't carry that. No, we don't carry that. Only the most basic thing anybody with asthma would ever need, a simple device, not even something that you have to plug in, just a little piece of plastic that you blow into and a little meter goes up. And I had a nice conversation there, too. I was polite. I'm always polite. But my conversation basically went along the lines of, so where are the potato chips? Aisle two? Oh. Cigarettes? Front of the store? Soda? The back of the store? I can get all this. I can get all of these ridiculous items that have nothing to do with health. I'm in a drugstore, and I can't get a basic item like a peak level meter. And I'll say this, you know, they saw the point. Yeah, that is kind of silly, isn't it? Especially since I can cross the street, go to 7-Eleven, and get all of the above, except for the peak level meter. Although, you know what, my chances are probably better going to 7-Eleven and having my health care dealt with there than going to the drugstore. That is the nature of drugstores in our country. Utterly insane. It's like, it's kind of like cable TV networks. Yeah, how am I going to draw this analogy? Okay, hear me out. You have these specialty stores that are, you know, a drugstore, you know, a department store, a convenience store, a supermarket, and they all start turning into the same thing. You know, they all start carrying the same things. You can buy pet food in all of them. You can buy soda. You can buy cigarettes. You can buy potato chips. You can buy all that nonsense that doesn't fit the description of the store. You know, in the old days, you used to go to the butcher and you didn't ask for vegetables. You didn't ask for, you know, for pretzels or for beer or anything like that. It was very specialized. Now, cable TV networks used to be specialized as well. Remember, Bravo used to be a fine arts channel. Fine arts, Bravo, you know, arts and entertainment used to be about arts and entertainment. BBC used to have shows from England. Well, now, you know, all these networks have turned into the same basic thing. They all have the same mass appeal programs. The science fiction channel has reality shows. Need I say more? So, yeah, you know, it all kind of merges into the same bland mediocrity. And I don't know why. I don't know why that is something that's thought to be desired, because everybody I know who is at all tied into to mass media feels that's the worst part of it, you know? So, yeah, that's why you always have to look for alternatives and find different options. Well, actually, you know what? I did find a different option. I actually found an old-fashioned mom-and-pop drugstore. That's all they had. They just had drugs and drug-related type things. You know, the way it used to be. I found one. And I got what I needed. It was a couple of models up. You know, it was it had a dial instead of just a little plastic thing. And I was really happy. You know, I got what I needed. Had to jump through a few hoops, but I did it. And so I took that home and opened it up and blew into that. Yeah, I pegged that one too. I got 800. I looked it up. Normal is around 500. Doesn't make any sense. In fact, there is no age group where 800 is normal. I have too much lung capacity, according to that thing. I gave it to a friend. And he tried it, got around 450. So I knew it wasn't something wrong with either of these devices. Something really bizarre is going on with me, where an allergist tells me my lungs are 85 years old and I've got superhuman lung strength at the same time. Follow-up appointment next week. We'll have all kinds of questions to ask. But yeah, it's just it's part of the fun and mystery of life. But I'll say this, you know, it's good to be able to get out there and be active, to ride a bike, to walk around. And I know there are so many people who are just tied to office work or to just the same mundane crap every single day. And you got to fight. You got to fight to get away from that. Because once you do, you feel so much better. And I'm an example of that because I'm always tied to things that involve staying inside and being in front of a screen. And sometimes you just got to say no, enough. And you'll find when you do that, the world doesn't fall apart. You know, you can walk away for a day. You can walk away for a few days. And yeah, it might be a little crazy, but you're better off in the long run. So That's kind of what it, what I did in the last few days before I got sick. I don't think this is related to that, but who knows? We'll find out soon enough, I suppose. What else is going on? Really, I don't know how to get into this. Really disturbing story that I just heard about. I just heard about this right before the program, actually. The local newspaper out here, the really local newspaper, had a front page story, showed all these kids with candles. And they were gathered. They were gathered in my park. And when I say my park, I mean this was where I grew up, in the S section of Stony Brook. Which, it's funny, it's the same development that Kevin James from King of Queens grew up. Exact same place. Went to the same high school and all that. I don't know how he survived, but and it was tough for me, too. But the S section, yeah, I'm very well familiar with it. So what are all these people doing, holding candles? And I read the story, and it was a tribute to a 13-year-old kid who had died the previous week, died in his home. And all these people showed up and were holding candles and did a candlelight vigil and a march to his home. And I looked up where he lived. He lived one block from where I grew up, one block away. 13 years old. And I was trying to find out. I was looking in the story. They say he died at his home. How does a 13-year-old just die at his home like that? And I had to do a bit of digging because it wasn't being reported. And sometimes newspaper stories are like that, where they withhold certain bits of information for whatever reason. And you had to read between the lines. And when I saw that the staff at the junior high school, the very junior high school that I went to, was holding grief counseling and information on suicide prevention, that I realized that this kid had taken his life at the age of 13. And then I read another piece where somebody said, let's not jump the gun and blame this on bullying because we don't know all the facts yet. And again, that to me says, you know what, there probably is something to that then. Because that's definitely one of the major concerns of somebody at that age, or of any age, really, but most certainly in that period of your life. It's a very hard part to get through, and if there is any support, it's very hard to see. And I know because I was 13. It was the worst year of my life. I lived one block away from this kid, went to the same school, was tortured by bullies for the entire year. And you better believe I was thinking of all kinds of options to get out of that, one way or another. So, I got to tell you, it hit close to home, just seeing all that, all that stuff that was recognizable. And, you know, I realized, yeah, we have a lot of awareness these days. We have a lot of online information, but we also have a lot of online stupidity. We have support networks, but we also are just as blind as we were back then. And there is no one answer to all of this. There's no way to simply reach out and get to everybody. You don't see that. You don't see that when you're going through it. And I can speak from personal experience that even when I did reach out and try to get help, it wasn't there. Sometimes it was made even worse. Sometimes the adults even were part of it. You know, there was one time, I've told some of these stories on the air before, but there was one time when I was in fourth grade. The two biggest years for being bullied for me were fourth grade and ninth grade. And I'm not sure if they still do it the same way at that particular junior high school, because it used to be, it might still be, junior high was grade 7, 8, 9, and high school was grade 10, 11, 12. Now they have middle schools. I don't know. I wouldn't survive in that. But ninth grade, my senior year in junior high school, worst year of my life. You'd think it would be a good year because you're at the top, but no. No, it wasn't, because of all the other people at the top, too, who were sadists. And God knows what they went on to be. But fourth grade was another hellish period. That was actually out in Port Jefferson at an elementary school. And for some reason I became the enemy of everybody. probably just being a dysfunctional family. There's always something. There's always a reason why kids will pick on somebody or find something different. There's always a reason. And there was one time where I was taking the bus home. I only lived maybe a half mile from the school, but it was pouring rain, so I decided to take the bus home that day. Big mistake, because word got out that I was on the bus, and the popular kids were the ones that were my biggest enemy. And so they were able to get everybody else to basically throw things, hit me with books, physical assault of all sorts. And I'm just kind of sitting there next to the window of the bus, kind of crouched, trying to just blend into nothing. Bus driver not doing anything. Aware of the situation, not doing a damn thing. And so there I am. It's the window is fogging up. And all I can think to do is write a four-letter word with my finger in the fog. Well, that got back to the bus driver, who immediately reported me to the school, and I was dragged in and given detention, and all kinds of other apologies had to be issued. Everybody was aware of what was going on. That was ignored, because nobody wanted to be the unpopular person in a mob and call them out on the crap they were doing. No, they wanted to be just as popular and pick on the one person that everybody was picking on. We've all seen this. And it extends. It goes into adulthood as well. It goes into international politics. It's part of the human condition. And I think really the only thing to say is that if you find yourself in that situation, you may not immediately see the ways out of it. I sure didn't. When I was 13, I definitely did not see the way out of that situation. And I was, like I said, considering all kinds of options, mostly to bring down the people who were causing me to basically fear life itself. And I'll say this, if I had access, no question about it, if I had access to something that would have ended that, with one button or one trigger or whatever, you better believe I would have seriously considered that. That's how bad it got. I'm talking about getting sick to your stomach when you wake up in the morning because you're so afraid to go to school. You don't know what's going to happen to you next. Trying to basically come up with reasons not to, or just hiding out the entire time. This kind of thing affects you. It turns you into an unhealthy person. So once you realize that, first of all, it doesn't stay like this. And when you realize that there are places to go, places to express yourself, if you find the right ones, then the world starts to open up again. But what we fail at doing to this day is getting that message out there. You know, trying to connect. We do a very bad job of trying to connect because we don't understand what it's like. We don't understand what people are going through at that particular moment. So it's mostly up to peers, people who are actually by your side that see exactly what's going on. And that kind of character gets built at an early age. You know, there are people in elementary school that know what's right and know what's wrong and will stand by somebody. And there are teachers who have not gotten it all their lives and will continue not to. But I guess, you know, the most important thing, though, is somehow to have next to your heart this message that it's not always going to be like this, assuming it's really, really bad at the moment. And that goes to people in all kinds of situations throughout their lives. There's always a way to change things. And you'll be amazed at how many surprises there are. How many good surprises there are. I mean, I'm still experiencing this myself. You know, I can say, it's going to get easier. It's going to get better. Not always. You know, sometimes it gets more challenging. But I will say this, it gets different. it gets different. And if you're open and willing to try something new and communicate and not keep it all bottled up inside you, you won't stay in a bad place for very long. There's never an excuse for drastic action, even though it may seem like there's no other way. So anyway, that's the kind of thing that was just going through my head hearing this story about this. And you know, again, I don't know the facts. I'm only surmising from what wasn't said and from some off-the-cuff remarks that were heard or printed that that's what happened with this kid who lived in my development. And, you know, it's really something. It might be different now, but back when I was growing up, living in a place like the S-section, conformity was very important. Having a green lawn was very important. Having a car was very important. Having a two-parent family and normal siblings, very important. And I didn't have any of that. And because of that, just because of that, my life was hell. There are all kinds of reasons why somebody stands out differently as an individual and why their lives will be made hell. And it doesn't just apply to elementary school or junior high school or high school. People are like that throughout life. But fortunately, they are the minority. And at some point, it might happen the next year. This is where it happened with me. When I went to high school the year afterwards, these people faded away. They were still there, but they were irrelevant because there were so many more people that weren't like them that I was able to identify with, that I was able to have fun with and live life with. At some point, that happens. At some point, you round the corner, and all of a sudden, they just fade into the background. So that's something I wish I knew back then. When I was going through the worst year of my life. But fortunately, I hung in there. Just because I didn't know what else I could do. All right. Didn't mean to get off on all that. It's just seeing this in the paper was really kind of stunning. And God, I hope there's kids out there that will support their friends. And that we'll do everything we can to support both the people we know and the people we don't know. And look for trouble signs when you see them. All right, you know, I know that's like a broken record here. We've been talking about the Trayvon Martin case for the last, I think, 3 weeks. But, you know, it is a big story. It is a pretty huge story, and it's indicative of so many things in this country that are problems that need to be dealt with. And, you know, it might seem like it's impossible that we can't do anything about this. That's just the way it is. It's never going to change. Well, you know what? I call BS on that because I don't think that's true. I think it's always possible to change things when you find yourself going down a bad path. And friends, we are going down a bad path. We're so far down this bad path, we can't even see where we came from. But it's never too late to turn around. Now, you know, I think it's reprehensible the guy is out on bail. You know, you accuse somebody of second-degree murder, and he's out on bail on less bail than friends of mine who have been accused of hacking. You know, there's something seriously wrong with that. Not to mention, you know, it's probably not the safest thing for him to be walking around when the facts of the case have not been revealed, and there's all kinds of things that just don't look right. So I just hope that this basically comes out, that the case is heard, and that we all learn something from this. And I don't think we are. I think it's turning into encampments of pro-Zimmerman and pro-Trayvon Martin. You know, I don't understand how it turned into that. Because how can you be anti the guy who got killed? You know, the guy who wasn't doing anything wrong. Yet there are people there. If you just look around, that's what it's turned into. Dead guy was wrong. The other guy was right. No, the dead guy was not wrong. Okay? He was simply walking home. There was no reason at all to be shot dead for the crime of walking home. And being mistaken at best for a bad person. Well, if that kind of thing is to be expected, then there's something seriously wrong with the way our society is set up. So the latest thing, apart from Zimmerman getting out on bail, basically, the police chief in the city of Sanford, where all this took place, resigned yesterday. And keep in mind, this is the guy who basically could have started a real investigation into this. This has nothing to do with whether or not you think Zimmerman is innocent or guilty. This has to do with doing the investigation. This guy did not push for that. Trayvon Martin's girlfriend, who was on the phone with him when he was killed, was not interviewed. Witnesses were not interviewed. The kid's body was basically stashed away for 2 days before he was even identified. Wasn't exactly a high priority. Yeah, this guy, at the very least, should resign. Probably face a whole lot more. But you know what? The city officials in Florida voted to block his resignation. Yeah, they're not going to accept it. The five city commissioners voted 3-2 not to accept his resignation. One of his backers called him one of the finest police officers in Florida. Says something about Florida, doesn't it? This is not right, just on a human level, she said, adding that attacks against the police chief were solely political. Of course, she didn't mention that the exact same board censured him with a vote of no confidence a month ago. You know, that's kind of telling right there. But this defensiveness and this refusal to see when somebody has screwed up big time, this is what prevents us from moving forward and learning. And we simply get divisions. Now, I want to contrast this. I want to contrast this to what goes on in other parts of the world. Let's go to the UK. They've had their share of violence over there. They deal with it a little bit differently. I think we can agree that the United Kingdom and the United States are different societies, but not so different that we would say, oh my God, it's impossible for us to ever survive over there. We can't do it. We just cannot do it. The cultures are different, but similar enough where we would be able to survive. Okay, can we agree on that? All right, so they have a very fundamental difference in the way that they deal with things like this. There was this this massacre over there in 1987 called the Hungerford Massacre. Now, we have massacres all the time. It's sick, but we do. We have them in schools. We have them in restaurants. We have them even in churches where somebody just, and of course, workplaces, somebody just goes berserk, goes nuts, and they take out a whole bunch of people. And like we were saying before, there are all kinds of buttons that can be pushed, all kinds of stress that can be put on people to make them do all kinds of horrible things. And when there's access to weapons of mass destruction. I consider a massacre mass destruction. Well, they will be used. You know, if we all had little nuclear bombs that we kept in our houses, I guarantee you a bunch of those would be going off too, despite the horror of what it would unleash. Give people access, they will use these things. Anyway, the Hungerford Massacre took place on August 19th of 1987 in Hungerford, which is in Berkshire in England. 27-year-old Michael Ryan, armed with two semi-automatic rifles and a handgun, shot and killed 16 people, including his mother, and wounded 15 others, then fatally shot himself. Remains one of the worst criminal atrocities involving firearms in British history. For us, it's page 2. All right, that's a bit of an exaggeration. 16 people would be still page 1. But, you know, it's getting to the point where it's it no longer shocks us. And that's sad. That's scary. The massacre was used. This is what's different. This is what's different in our cultures. All right, get ready. The massacre was used as the reasoning to pass the Firearms Amendment Act of 1988, which banned the ownership of semi-automatic centerfire rifles and restricted the use of shotguns with a magazine capacity of more than 3 rounds. Now, the Hungerford Report had demonstrated that Ryan's collection of weapons was legally licensed. But that is how society chose to deal with it. By passing an amendment, making it a bit more difficult. In our country, we would do the opposite. We do the exact opposite. We'd pass an amendment saying more guns are now required. In fact, another story that recently was published in USA Today focused on legislatures in a dozen states considering laws that would eliminate requirements that residents obtain permits to carry concealed weapons. Listen to this guy. In New Hampshire, Republican Representative J.R. Hulls, or Hulls, I'm not really sure how to pronounce that. He has a bill that has cleared the House. Hull points to the recent school shooting in Chardon, Ohio. I don't know if you can remember that one. That wasn't too long ago, where kids just seemed to randomly take out a bunch of other kids in a cafeteria. Points to that massacre as a failure of gun control. Gun-free zones kill people, he said. Gun-free zones kill people, said Representative J.R. Hull of New Hampshire. Well, Representative Hull, you are an idiot. You are a moron. You are somebody, I think, with blood on your hands, because that kind of thinking, that twisted logic of saying that we need more guns to combat all the guns leads to so many more people firing them in the first place. What are you suggesting, that every kid in high school now walks around armed? Because you know what? There was nobody else there. One kid taking out a bunch of others, eventually firing on teachers as well, but it was a student area. There was no way that anything other than arming kids would have satisfied you. And you know what? That doesn't work either. Because when you have these weapons that idiots like you push on people, and yes, I will say that kids are encouraged to have guns in school in this crazy country. Why are they encouraged? Well, first of all, with this kind of moronic reasoning, where gun-free zones kill people, yeah. With the metal detectors that are everywhere, which basically tells people, yeah, you know what, you're at danger, you're at risk. You better arm yourself. You better have an option. And just the overall mentality of somehow we're in the Wild West and we have to all arm ourselves or be victims. And that it's dangerous just around the corner. Might be the world you want to live in. Not the world I think most people want to live in. People in New Hampshire, get rid of this guy, please. Get rid of this guy. Get rid of all people like this. You know, because they drag down society. They make us basically start heading back to the 1800s and live in the kind of situation where George Zimmerman actions are the rule, not the exception. All right, let's go back over to the UK, because I tell you, the US is really pissing me off right about now. Dunblane. I think a lot of us have heard of Dunblane. Now, that school massacre occurred at Dunblane Primary School in the Scottish town of Dunblane on March 13th, 1996. A 43-year-old Thomas Hamilton entered the school armed with 4 handguns, shooting and killing 16 children and 1 adult before committing suicide. Public debate subsequent to these events centered on gun control laws, including public petitions calling for a ban on private ownership of handguns and an official inquiry, the Cullen Report, In response to this debate, the Firearms Amendment Act of 1997 and the Firearms Amendment No. 2 Act of 1997 were enacted, which effectively made private ownership of handguns illegal in the United Kingdom. Yeah. And that's the way it is over there. Let's look at these amendments. The Firearms Amendment Act of 1997 was introduced by the Conservative government of John Major. Conservative government introduced this following the Dunblane massacre. It's not a left-right issue over there. Effectively banned the possession of all handguns other than those chambered for 22 rimfire cartridges by civilians in most of the United Kingdom. And then, later on that same year, Tony Blair's Labour government introduced the Second Firearms Amendment Act of 1997. That act was created in response to the Snowdrop Petition, which followed the Dunblane massacre. The previous Conservative government had followed the recommendation of the Cullen Report on the massacre and introduced the Firearms Amendment Act of 1997 that banned high-caliber handguns greater than 22 caliber. This new act further banned the private ownership of all cartridge ammunition handguns, regardless of caliber. The only handguns still allowed following the ban were antique and muzzle-loading black powder guns, guns of historic interest whose ammunition is no longer available, guns of historic interest with current calibers, air pistols, and guns which fall outside the Home Office definition of handguns. All right, you know, it's far-reaching. It's dramatic. It's different. But they seem to be surviving. You know, they're not living under chains. They're not prevented from expressing themselves any more than we are here. In fact, it's probably a lot worse here. I dare say there's probably more people with access to firearms in North Korea than there are in the United Kingdom. Not doing them a whole lot of good, is it? It's not the guns. It's the society that surrounds you. That's what determines your level of freedom. And when you get obsessed with firearms and feel that gun-free zones are deadly and that you need to arm yourself to the hilt to prevent God knows what, you can't be surprised when horrible things continue to happen. Now, let's see. There was one other shooting in the U.K., which is much more recent. This was the Cumbria shootings. It was a killing spree that occurred on June 2nd of 2010 when a lone gunman killed 12 people and injured 11 others before killing himself in Cumbria, England. Again, one of the worst criminal acts involving firearms in British history. And you can say that this shows that all the laws fail, that criminals will still get their hands on guns. Of course, it's going to happen no matter what. But it will happen less. And all you have to do is look at the numbers. Look at how many times instances happen in other places. Sure, they're horrible whenever they happen. But they don't ever become the norm. They don't ever become something that people are desensitized to. And of course, we've seen what's been happening over in Norway with Anders Breivik. In fact, people in Europe are sick of hearing about this because this lunatic is just basically getting all this airtime and basically the most evil person on the planet, I think, saying that, yes, I would do it again. I would kill all those kids. 77 kids he killed. But the way the Norwegians are dealing with it is the way that I think any civilized society should deal with it. Not changing who they are, not resorting to panic, realizing the tremendous tragedy of this, realizing, actually, he did say one thing that resonated. He said, anybody could have done this. It's true. Anybody could do that. Anybody could do a lot of things. Anybody can blow up a car. Yeah, anybody can build a bomb. Anybody can basically drive a car into oncoming traffic and kill innocent people. Anybody can start a fire. Anybody can do all kinds of things. The fact that everybody doesn't tells us something about who we are. And if we assume everybody is going to be a completely crazed individual and destroy ourselves in the process, well, then we change. We change so fundamentally that you might as well say that the evil people have won. There's all kinds of parallels to terrorism and what's changed in this country after 9/11. But what's happening in Norway is that people are certainly not changing who they are, refusing to be afraid, refusing to assume that more people are going to exist like this. And even if they do, giving up who they are is not worth the price. All right. That gets me through just about everything I think I had to say. If there are any calls out there, I'd like to hear from people or a phone number. I'm sorry for taking up so much time, but as I said, I am delirious and sick, and I would like to hear from people. 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. Is that the phone number? It's been so long since I've given out the phone number, and I'm also kind of seeing things that aren't there. I see this clock in front of me that doesn't make any sense. Well, let me go into delay and I'll explain the clock because this is just, it's just too crazy to believe. Can we get some people in here? We'll go into delay and then we'll take some phone calls. 631-632-WUSB.
You're listening to WUSB 90.1, Radio Free Long Island. Hi, this is Jamina Pearl of Be Your Own Pet.
And yeah, I kind of messed that up, didn't I? All right, I'm sorry. Let me recover from all the mistakes I just made. Excuse me. All right, 631-632-9872. Let me explain the clock. It's got, how do I say this? It's not 12 numbers on it. It's 24 numbers. It's a 24-hour clock, but not a digital clock. It's a round clock. So it appears to be 10 minutes to 10 right now, but it's actually about 10 minutes to 19. Yeah, and they basically make this thing so that it has twice as many numbers on it. It's very, very confusing. It's not what I need to see right now. All right, you know, why I go into delay and all the calls go away. That's all right, nice practical joke there, folks. We'll give it a couple of minutes. So if anybody else wants to call in, 631-632-9872. We don't have to simply talk about this. We can talk about anything that's going on in the world. Yeah, and there's a lot going on in the world, that's for sure. For instance, a meteorite landed in Nevada. Yeah, the explosion heard, this sounds like something out of Twilight Zone, doesn't it? Explosion heard near the border between Nevada and California appears to have been caused by a meteorite, according to astronomers at the Fleischmann Planetarium at the University of Nevada in Reno. Astronomers believe the meteorite landed southeast of the city of Reno, 8 a.m. local time. The explosion shook window panes and homes at various locations, both in Nevada and California. And eyewitnesses in both states say a ball of fire crossed the sky. Well, that sounds like fun. We need more things like that. All right, you know, I'm just not very patient. I can't wait around forever for people to realize that we're taking phone calls, so I'm going to exit delay in about 30 seconds if the phone does not ring. 631-632-9872. I'm also having trouble hearing myself in the headphones, so I'm not even sure this is working. Yeah. All right, I'm going to start reading this editorial from the New York Times. That's what I'll do. We'll close things off that way. About Republicans and the gun lobby. Republican politicians gathering at the National Rifle Association convention in St. Louis are... Oh, okay, that got people calling in. Let's take a phone call. Good evening, you're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, with Marcel de Jong from the Netherlands.
Oh, hey, how you doing? All the way from Holland, eh?
Holland. I'm doing okay. I'm a bit sickish as well today.
Must be something going around.
Yeah, I think so. It's the flu that's worldwide now, I think.
The worldwide flu. How about that? So what's on your mind tonight?
Well, you were talking about bullying earlier tonight, and I've been bullied as well when I was younger, and it does get better, but it takes a long while.
Yeah, it does get better. That's definitely true, but you won't see it overnight, you know, and it's complex and is ups and downs. The important thing to remember is that it's worth the struggle, that you'll find all kinds of things about yourself and about other people, and you'll be stronger as a result. And just know that you're never alone. There's always people out there that are going through the exact same thing that will listen to you.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, we were discussing it on the chat room as well. And there are a lot of people in there, indeed, that have been bullied. And it's such a sad story, really, when that happens.
Yeah, it most definitely is. And
it can be really cruel.
I don't think other kids realize the effect that their cruelty can have either. You know, we can't just label them as evil and people that have no regard for human life. I think when you're a kid, you don't realize that your actions can have profound effects. I really think it's up to parents to instill that in their kids so that they are treating their fellow classmates with respect and basically listening to them as well.
Yeah, I agree, indeed.
All right, listen, we're out of time. I want to thank you for calling.
You're welcome, and have a nice evening.
All right, you too.
Call soon.
All right, I want to thank that person for calling in, and the other people we didn't get to, I'm sorry about that, but we'll try and take more phone calls next week. And maybe by then I won't be delirious, and we'll be able to have a nice conversation. Oh, God, that's a bit loud, isn't it? Okay, I'm going to stumble out of here. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear what you have to think and say. Till next week, Emmanuel, for Off the Wall. Good night.
I don't know who I am. I don't know who you are. But when I touch your hand, I see shooting stars. I see Ferris wheels, curling walls of steel and light. Over twisted wires, some lost heartfelt word caught up on the line. We speak through satellites that hang like the stars at night in the sky. Stars at night in the sky.